All right, so I just want to ask this morning, have you ever seen the show Antiques Roadshow? For everyone who hasn't seen it, it's a show where people bring in old stuff from home and professional valuers take a look at the things that people bring in and tell them if it's worth anything. Now, some of you who know the show and like it are probably really interested right now, others are probably pretty tuned out, but just stay with me if you're tuned out. It is kind of interesting to watch this show for a few reasons, to see all the different things that people bring in, and like there are lots of weird and wonderful things that have been created over many, many years. It's fun trying to work out yourself whether you think the things that they bring in are worth anything or not, and then seeing what the valuer thinks and whether you are right. But sometimes it's just funny watching how people react when they get unexpected news. Sometimes they're bringing stuff in and they think this is worth a mint. And then the valuer looks at it and goes, oh yeah, $10. And then you just see these people walk away deflated. But I guess what's more interesting is when people bring something in, they have really no idea what it is. Like, it's something that they was in this deep, dark corner of their great-grandmother's house. They've never seen it before in their life. They have no idea what it is, and they bring it in. Or something that they picked up in a garage sale for, $5, $10, and they don't really know what it is. They've just got this inkling that maybe it was a little bit worth a little bit more than that. And they bring this stuff in, and they show it to the valuer, and the valuer says to them, "Do you know what this is? This was made by some really famous person like a few hundred years ago, and there's collectors all over the world looking for this. This is worth, over $100,000. And the people who bought it in, they look like they've just won the lottery, because in a sense, they kind of have. Just up on the board here, but on the screen behind me, there you can see a table there. That was a table that someone bought at a garage sale for $25. And apparently, on the show, that they found it was a rare 18th century table, and it's just recently sold for over $500,000. The painting that you see in the picture there, this was something that a guy bought at a shop. The shop thought it was a fake, and so he bought it for cheap. He brought it into the show, and they had a really good look at it, and they found it wasn't a fake. It was actually the genuine one, and it's worth over $650,000. That rug that you see there, that was one that a lady saw that her neighbour was chucking a bunch of stuff out on the street, and she saw the rug and go, "Oh, I could use that. Can I take that?" And the neighbor's like, "Yeah, fine. It's just going to go to the bin otherwise." And she had an inkling it might be worth a little bit more, so she took it into the show. And they said that this was a rug that was woven in the 1800s in Turkmenistan, and that this rug that she got for free off the street was worth over $150,000. There's plenty of other examples, but the point that I'm trying to make is this. Sometimes the things people reject are actually really valuable. In these three examples, the people didn't want these items anymore and they chose to get rid of them. In other words, these items were all rejected items, but in the end, they turned out to be very valuable. In this morning's passage, Peter is writing a similar message to churches which are in what is now modern-day Turkey. He's writing to Christians in these churches who are feeling like they're being treated badly because of their faith. They're being persecuted. They feel like no one wants them around. And in this passage, he tells them that though they may be rejected by people, they are not rejected by God. In fact, much more than that, they are chosen and honoured by God. That though they might feel like that they're things that other people want to dump at the tip, they are of great value in God's sight. And God's valuation is the only one that really matters. So it is for us. As Christians, we can feel like we're weak and we're rejected by people, but in God's eyes, we too are chosen, royal, holy, with a hope of glory and honour that come from God. What wonderful gospel news that we're going to get into this morning. So let's pray. We'll get into it. Heavenly Father, you are a great God. You've done great things. and we are. You know, you've truly changed us. You've stepped in and you've done great things for us. And because of who you are and what you've done for us, we do have great value. And Father, I pray that as we look at this passage this morning, that we would better comprehend what you have done for us. Help us to see what you have done and what we look forward to because of what Jesus has done on the cross. And Father, I pray that you'd help me to get across this message this morning in a way that is real and is clear. And I pray that by the time we get to the end of this passage this morning, that we may be, you know, bursting at the seams, wanting to tell each other of all the things that you have done for us and declare your praises. In Jesus' name, amen. So this morning's passage is 1 Peter chapter 2, verses 4 to 10, which Michael read out to us earlier. We're picking up from where we left off last week. Peter's reminded these struggling churches of the wonderful hope that they have to look forward to, and he's called them to live their whole lives today different from everyone else, as if that hope were true. But he knows that asking them to do that will lead to rejection and suffering at the hands of other people who aren't following Jesus. Because it did for Jesus. And it did for him, for Peter himself, as he followed Jesus. And so we have this morning's passage to encourage them to change their perspective and hopefully find strength to keep going through these difficult times. And so how does he encourage them? Three things this morning. He tells them that God is making them into a new temple. He tells them that God has given them a new identity. He tells them that God has given them a new purpose. So first, God is making them into a new temple. But before we go on, what is a temple? Sounds like a strange thing to call us, isn't it? I guess a temple is a place where God lives. A temple is a place where people come to meet with God. A temple is a place where priests offer sacrifices. Now, if we look back way back in the Bible to 2 Kings, 1 Kings, you know, Solomon built a temple to God. It was a place where God symbolically lived. I mean, he's the God of the universe. He is everywhere, but symbolically at least, he set up his throne on earth in the temple, on the mercy seat that was in the Holy of Holies. In this temple, once a year, a high priest would go in and he would meet with God. In Solomon's temple, there would be priests there working day and night, continually offering sacrifices to God. If you read the description of the temple in 1 Kings, it was magnificent. There was literally tons and tons of gold that made this place up. There was even more silver, and there was apparently a countless amount of bronze that made this temple up. The rest of the building materials that it was made of were only the finest building materials in the known world. And the way it was decorated all over, inside and out, it was just world class. If you turned up, you would have no doubt that this was a home that was fit for God to live in. But there was one problem with this temple, at least. It's the same problem that all other temples, you know, to false gods and idols all have. All these temples are built by men, and they can be destroyed by men. These man-made temples, they could arouse people's awe and wonder as they looked at them and saw how wonderful and beautiful that they were. But equally, that beauty could be destroyed. It could be knocked down. The gold and silver melted and taken away. The ornaments strewn all over the ground. The pride that people took in these man-made temples, it could easily be turned to shame as they look at this burnt-out ruin where this magnificent building used to be. Ultimately, that's what happened to Solomon's temple. The Israelites took pride in it. They thought that as long as it was there, they would never be put to shame by being defeated by their enemies. But ultimately, they rebelled against God and the Babylonians came and defeated them and destroyed the temple completely. The once proud temple of Solomon was put to shame. But why am I saying all this? Look at the passage again. Read it closely. I'll read it again from verse 4. As you come to him, a living stone, rejected by people but chosen and honored by God, you yourselves as living stones, a spiritual house, are being built to be a holy priesthood to offer spiritual sacrifices acceptable to God through Jesus Christ. For it stands in Scripture, see, I lay a stone in Zion, a chosen and honored cornerstone, and the one who believes in him will never be put to shame. So honor will come to you who believe, but for the unbelieving, the stone the builders had rejected, this one has become the cornerstone, and a stone to stumble over and a rock to trip over. They stumble because they disobey the word. They were destined for this. What Peter is saying to these Christians who are feeling despised and rejected, he's saying, look, for all of you who are coming to Jesus, for everyone who believes in Jesus and obeys his word, you know what? God is building you into a spiritual house. God is building you into a temple. Well, God has built you into a temple and he's building that temple. People might not want anything to do with you, but when you meet together, God is there with you. Other people might want you to go and live somewhere else, but the God of the universe has chosen to live among you. Though you might be shamed in the world, what greater honor is there but to have God himself live among you? So that if people want to meet with God, all they need to do is come to church with you because he is right here in our midst. And though you live in a world where they're speaking to the first century Christians, though you live in a world where there are a lot of wonderful looking temples, none of those temples is anything compared to the temple that you have been made, that you are. Why? Because those temples that you can see, they might be wonderful and magnificent achievements of architecture, but they are all built by men, and they can be destroyed by men and put to shame. You, the church, as living stones in a spiritual house, are much better than that. Because you are a temple being built by God himself, and this work that God is doing will never be defeated. It will never be torn down and put to shame. You might be doing it tough. People might be making your life difficult because you follow Jesus. People are doing what they can to try and make you and the church go away. But God is the one building this church, and there is nothing any person can do to stop God doing what he has planned to do. These other people may look scary, their rejection might sting, but they won't prevail against you because God is the one building you. Those seeking to put you to shame are the ones who will be put to shame. As God's living stones in God's spiritual house, honor will come to you, even if you suffer difficulties for a little while now. The church, God is building the church and it won't be defeated. And this is the witness that we see through church history. Apparently, it was G.K. Chesterton who said, 5 times the church has gone to the dogs, but each time it was the dog that died. And the church came to life again. It was the dog that died because it's God who's building the church, and God will always win. While those who disobey the word, it's those who will be put to shame. So today, if you're a believer, it might look like there's lots of people out in the world trying to destroy the church, but take heart. Keep believing in Jesus. Jesus was rejected by men and killed, but he wasn't defeated. He was raised to life again, and he is now reigning in glory at the right hand of the Father, having been given the name that is above every name, so that at his name every knee shall bow in heaven and on earth and under the earth. He is the living stone, and we too are living stones. We too might be rejected and even killed, but we won't be defeated. We are chosen by God, and honor will come to us who believe in him. God is building the church into a new temple. We also learn from this passage that God has given the church a new identity. What do I mean by that? Well, think of it this way. Imagine a boy growing up in an orphanage. You know, everyone knows, or, you know, somehow everyone knows his mother worked in the world's oldest profession and he was conceived at work. His mother couldn't look after him, so she left him on the doorstep one morning. This orphanage, it's not the greatest orphanage in the world. The people who run it treat the children really badly. They make them, occasionally they make them look good so they can get money from donors so they can spend it on themselves. And the rest of the time, the children are fed rubbish and they're dressed around in rags. The managers know all that these children come from sordid backgrounds and they take every opportunity to tell the children how much they are dirt and rubbish. At this point, if you asked this boy and said, "Who are you?" what do you think he'd say? He'd say, "You know, who am I? I'm nothing. I'm no one. I don't even know what my name is. I'm rubbish. I'm good for no one and nothing." Then imagine this little boy is given a letter one day. He opens it and he reads it and it says, "You know, you've never seen me, but I know you. I know everything about you, and you are more dear to my heart than you can ever know. I've chosen to adopt you as my son, and tomorrow you will come and live with me. I'll be a father to you, and you will become an heir of everything that belongs to me. To me, you are very special, and I've chosen you for a task which I know that only you can do." The next day, this little boy is picked up, and he's taken to a new home, and he meets his new family. He's adopted into this family. He's given a new name. He's given a tour of everything that now belongs to him. And he's shown what his task is. And he begins training and education towards it. Now at this point, if you ask the boy, "Who are you?" what do you think he'd say? Say, I'm the son of a father who loves me. I have a name. I'm an heir. I'm someone with purpose in life. Basically, the identity is how you answer the question, "Who am I?" Probably for most of the blokes out here, I bet if I come and ask you, "Who am I?" you'd probably say, "Oh, you know, I'm an engineer. I'm a sparky. I'm a builder." If I ask most of the ladies, I might hear something different. I might hear something like, "Well, you know, I'm married to so-and-so. I'm a mother of this and that child." If you're a believer this morning, how many of you factor into your own identity some of the identity terms that come up in the passage this morning? We've read through them. If I came and said to ask you, "Who are you?" would you even think to say, "I am a holy priest within a holy priesthood," verse 5? How many of you would say, "I'm a member of a race chosen by God. I am a prince or a princess within a royal priesthood, and my brother is the king. I'm a citizen of a holy nation sanctified by the Spirit of God himself. I am one of many people who belong to God himself. And he calls us his treasured possession." Verse 9. How many of you would say something like that? Because if you're a believer today, that is who Peter is saying you are. No doubt the Christians Peter was writing to were being called all sorts of things. You know, the people around them were probably trying to label them with all sorts of unhelpful identities. And the same is true today. All over the world today, Christians are labeled with all sorts of unfortunate names. "Oh, so you're a Christian, are you? Well, do you know what? You are..." I'm sure you've heard lots of different ways that sentence can be completed. But Peter is saying, look, you may hear other people saying that, but listen to how God finishes that sentence. Because ultimately it's what God says that matters. And God says that if you believe in Jesus, you are God's chosen possession, chosen to be set apart and different from everyone else, but set apart for a purpose, that God himself has given to you, set apart to receive glory and honor as one of God's own precious sons or daughters. You are an adopted son or daughter because he is the king, you are adopted into his family and you are royal. You are a race, a nation, a people who are all priests, and no person will ever take that away from you. As we were saying at the start, some might not think you're very, very valuable. Some might reject you, but in truth, you are more valuable than you know. It kind of makes me think a little bit of Stephen Bradbury. Yeah, do you know who Stephen Bradbury is? Everyone, a few nods. He was the first Australian to win a Winter Olympic gold medal. It was in the speed skating. It was a number of years ago now. He made the final of the speed skating because all the other skaters crashed out in the semi-final. Then he was in the final. He was coming last in the final, and just before the finish line, all the other skaters crashed. And so thankfully he was the guy who crossed the finish line first. Now, lots of people have a crack at him because he crossed the finish line first because everyone else crashed. And lots of people say lots of things about him and call him lots of names. They say, you know, he didn't deserve to win, rah, rah, rah. But you know what? He can turn around to all these people who want to put him down and say, well, say what you want, but I'm an Olympic gold medal winner. And no matter what you say, you cannot take that away from me. So it is for us. Others might want to say what they want to say about us, but we know that because of what Jesus has done on the cross, everyone who believes in him can say what you want, but I am chosen. I am royal. I am holy. I am one of God's own treasured possessions, and no matter what you say, you cannot take that away from me. Now, just one little point I want to make before we move on. The passage says that believers are a holy and royal priesthood, not you are a priest. It says that believers are a chosen race, not a single chosen one. It says we're a holy nation, not a solitary holy citizen. It says we're a people for his possession, not an individual person that's his. So, I mean, what am I getting at here? In our Western world, individualism is pushed so hard. You know, we all like to be our own people in our own house, our own little castle. You know, these days people think that life is all about me, that me getting what I want and making sure I get my preferences. You know, I studied marketing at uni a little while ago, and that's what drives the whole marketing process, trying to work out what individual people want and giving these individual people exactly what they think they want. No wonder people start to think that life is all about them and them getting what they want. But as God's chosen people, we're not called to be a bunch of individuals seeking our own wants. We're called to be part of a larger body, a body where each part is fundamentally connected to all the other parts, all seeking the glory of the one who called us out of darkness into his light, all seeking together the will of the Father who adopted us into his own family. It means at least two things. The first is there's no such thing as it's just me and Jesus sort of Christian. Each of us is fundamentally connected to each other as we're all connected to Christ. If you're a Christian who thinks you can have spiritual life without being a part of a church, it's like chopping off a finger and throwing it away and expecting it to stay alive and well. How long do you think that finger will live without the rest of the body supporting it? Not very long. So as Christians, we're saved to be part of a body where we each need each other, and by working together and playing our own unique parts within the body, then the body will function well for the good of everybody in the body. The second part is when we're part of a church, we're part of something much bigger than ourselves. We might look around at this church and see, well, you know, there's however many of us there are here. But when we compare that to the 7 billion or so people in the world who are alive today, it feels a little bit insignificant. Or when we compare that to the 100 billion or so people who've ever been alive ever, you know, it doesn't, maybe it makes the gathering here feel a little bit smaller than what we thought it was. But when we put our trust in Jesus, we become part of God's building project. And God is building his church here in Gympie. He's building his church here in Queensland, in Australia, in all the rest of the world. God is building his church in every people and every tribe and every tongue around the world. And God just isn't building his church now. God has been building his church throughout history. It's a project that began thousands of years ago, and it's a project that will continue until Jesus comes back, however long that takes. So when we believe, we become part of something that God is doing that is much bigger than ourselves. But also, when we believe, we become part of what God is doing across time, across the world. And that leads into the last point this morning, that as believers, God has given us a new purpose. What is that purpose? Well, we've touched on it before. The purpose is to be priests in God's temple. But what does a priest in a temple do? Well, I guess from verse 5, what we see is one of the primary things that priests do is they offer sacrifices. As I look around the church this morning, I don't see bulls or goats or doves. I don't see blood spattered over any altars anywhere. So if we're a holy priesthood to offer spiritual sacrifices, what is he talking about then? At this point, you could go to Romans 12, verse 1, where Paul urges believers to present themselves as living sacrifices. We could say that the sacrifices that we're to present are ourselves, because Christ has redeemed us and bought us with his blood on the cross, that because when we believe that our old self died with Christ and the life we have now is for Christ, that the life we live now is not our own. We live as living sacrifices, no longer seeking my way and the desires of my flesh, but living for Jesus and seeking his will and his desires. We can read that the sacrifices we offer in verse 5 are ourselves as living sacrifices, but that's not what Peter primarily has in mind in this passage. The sacrifices that Peter is mainly thinking of is in verse 9. We are priests who offer sacrifices of the proclamation of the praises of God, the one who called us out of darkness into his marvelous light. What Hebrews 13, verse 15 calls a sacrifice of praise, a sacrifice that we are continually to offer up through Christ, which is the fruit of lips that confess his name. A purpose that God's priests have had from the very beginning. Deuteronomy 10, verse 8 says that priests were to pronounce blessings in God's name. Basically, the sacrifices we offer as a holy priesthood is telling everybody how great God is. To tell others how wonderful is everything that he's done for us. This is one of the main reasons that we sing songs together on a Sunday, declaring to each other the praises of all the wonderful things that he's done for us. And if we're living holy lives which are different to everyone else, and everyone else can see it, and they come and ask us, why are you living so differently to me? What an opportunity it is to say, well, it's because of Jesus and what he's done for me. And let me tell you about Jesus, because he really is good. And how awesome would it be if someone else chose to come to Jesus themselves because they heard from you how good Jesus is and they want to taste and see his goodness for themselves. God has given us this purpose, and it's a glorious purpose, because as we proclaim his praises, God does his work through his word and his kingdom will come. Now, declaring God's praises, it shouldn't be hard. I mean, think about it. We are all great evangelists for the things that we think are good. When you've gone to a movie and you've really enjoyed it, What do? You go out and you tell all your friends, I just saw this movie. It is so good. You've got to go and watch it. When Queensland win the State of Origin, which they did on Wednesday night, just in case there's any Blues supporters, what do? You go and say to someone, how good was that game? Did you see those tries? How on earth does a bloke do that? When someone comes to you and says, you know, I could really use a holiday, but I'm not really sure where to go. What do you reckon? What do? You say, oh, look, I know this great log cabin in the woods at Montville that we stayed at, or I know this quiet beach house that we stayed at near Rainbow Beach. I loved it. It was great. It was so quiet and so relaxing. You've got to go there and see what you think. You know, one that I might be a bit guilty of recently is like, have you tried, you know, so-and-so cafe? The coffee is amazing. You've got to go and try it. It's not hard to declare the praises of the things that we think are good. So if as God's people we have truly tasted that the Lord is good, declaring his praises will come naturally. And how has he been good to you? I mean, I'm just thinking of some of the songs that I was singing in the car on the way in this morning. I'm not who I was, but by his grace, now I am who I am, a sinner saved, a stumbling saint. I'm not ever alone. He's alive in my soul, the ghost of God who sanctifies day by day by day. How good is that? Have you tried that? If not, you've got to try that. I'm his kid, no matter what I'm feeling. I am loved, no matter what. I am loved, no matter what. How good is that? A bit more personally. When I was growing up, I just struggled a little bit. And basically, you know, we've been talking about other people calling people unhelpful things. Well, basically, the person who was calling me unhelpful names was me. And for whatever reason, I'd keep telling myself that I should be so much more than who I was. It didn't matter what I did, didn't matter what I achieved, I was never good enough for myself. You know, that led to other issues, I'm sure you can understand. Something that God has done for me since I've become a Christian is he's helped me to listen less to that, and listen more to him. As a believer, what he tells me is that I'm loved with faithful love, compassion. Despite what I might say, he has chosen me to be adopted as his own dear son. I might be weak. I might not be able to do everything as much as I want to do, but his grace is sufficient for me. In my weakness, he is strong. And that's what matters. He is truly a good God who has been much better to me than what I ever deserve. And when we really realize this, just declaring praises just comes naturally. Now, I won't stop praising him there. Something that's really hammered home to me when I was on the ship, when Chris and I went to Cambodia, that there are believers from so many different nations and languages and cultures. When I was doing those mission trips, I was thinking, you know, some of you people are from such different places to me, from such different backgrounds. How could we possibly have anything in common? It was at those times that this truth that God is creating his own people from all throughout the world, it just really becomes real. I mean, speaking with believers from, you know, Africa and Europe, America, all over, there's so much that was different. But there was this deep, fundamental bond that I felt with these other believers. Like, they truly did feel like genuine brothers and sisters, even though there's no earthly explanation for it. I guess, you know, during times at high school, at uni, I had felt desperately alone. But at those times when we were on those missions, in particular, God was making it clear that once I was not a people, but now I am one of God's own people. People God is calling all the world over, throughout all human history, people who God is giving a living hope of a glorious future. And God is not exclusive about it. The offer to join this people is open to all who repent and believe. How good is that? Have you tasted that the Lord is good? If you found him good, have you told anyone how good he's been to you? That's what we're called to. And before you go home today, I encourage you to tell at least one other person how God has been good to you. Not only as we sing this last song, not only as we share communion together, but tell someone else how he has been good to you, because he is a good God who has been good to us. And telling others just that is what we are called to. And the more we do it, the easier it'll get. And summing up, man, someone might be driving past this morning. They might look over to us meeting here and think, you know, look at all those people in there. There's not many who are really all that clever. They're not really well qualified. There's not many rich or powerful people sitting in there. There's no one in there of noble birth. Most of them look pretty weak and foolish and insignificant, really. What are they even doing? I wish, you know, I reckon Gympie would be a better place if all those people just packed up and left. Well, Peter's message is this. Take heart. God is building his church and he lives among us here. No man will be able to stop what he is doing. In fact, they're the ones who will be stopped. They might not see it, but we are very valuable to the only one whose valuation really matters. Others might reject us, but we are chosen and precious to God, and no man can take that away from us. And God has chosen us for a purpose. A glorious purpose which spans the whole world through all time. The purpose is simply tasting and seeing how good God is and just telling other people about it. Let's spend some time in thanks and praise in prayer. I'd like to bow your heads with me.